Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on the weekend edition of Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG. We're online at kpcg.fm as well. And a lot to talk about today, including some speeches at the United Nations, causing a little bit of a stir, some of the things that are said. International relations, always a dicey issue. We've got some details about that coming up. Also, what's the top university in the world? New report out on that. And a couple of humorous ones, too, that I think you'll enjoy. All that and more coming up on this edition of Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here, 101.3 KPCG online, kpcg.fm. We have a live link at thetrumpet.com as well. And don't forget about the TuneIn app. You can use that to listen to KPCG on the go. And you can even do it like our friend Grant Turgeon here, who listened on his phone in the shower and then dropped it. But then your phone was saved with rice, so you drained all that water off.
Right. And I did make a pretty impressive catch in the shower, too. But did get a little bit wet at the same time.
That is an impressive catch.
Not easy to do that when you're occupied.
No, I had an impressive catch this morning. I was walking up the stairs here to the studio carrying a couple of things, and I tripped on the stair and caught myself and my items. Oof. So I felt good about that. I was like, wow, that's a good recovery. And knowing full well a few people saw me, didn't even acknowledge them. Just kept going like it was all part of the plan. It's
a little bit of planned entertainment for them.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, so I tripped on the stoop there. It does happen sometimes, but it's worse when you drop everything. So thankfully, I caught a few of the items that I was carrying. A few headlines to get to today. Also, we're going to preview the Key of David program and the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Some really interesting details coming out about the what happened there in Charlotte. We've got some information about that. It turns out the protesters are not all locals, so Grant will have more on that for us. And a few other stories then, and details about a few humorous stories to share with you, to lighten and brighten your day, because there are some funny things going on out there, and we'll talk about them. This is kind of interesting. I hadn't heard too much about this, I guess, because all the headlines going on there with Charlotte, but quite a bit of rain in the Midwest over the last few days. Up to 10 inches of rain in Midwest leaves one dead and a soggy mess in its wake. Several Midwestern states were a soggy mess Thursday after up to 10 inches of rain fell in parts of Minnesota, Wisconsin, my home state, and Iowa, and triggered mudslides that caused one death. You're not used to mudslides in those parts of the country. Washed out railroad tracks derailed the train in southwestern Wisconsin, where a mudslide destroyed a house and killed the man inside. Crews built dams to protect a cheese cave, of course, and a woolen mill in southern Minnesota. A cheese cave? Yeah, look that up. And in northern Iowa, about 100 people were evacuated from their apartments. The rain mostly moved through the states Wednesday evening and early Thursday, though another round was in the forecast for northern Iowa on Thursday night. So much of the water began to recede or drain off a day or so ago, but of course the effects are still there. So not used to getting that much rain, really, anywhere. You get 10 inches quickly, it's going to cause problems pretty much anywhere. I can't remember there ever being a mudslide up there. I'm sure there was, and I just didn't know it. But you know, think of it in mountainous areas or California or places like that. But yeah, bad deal. Get killed in a mudslide in your own house.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to picture what a mudslide would look like coming toward you. It just seems unrealistic in a way, but obviously they happen. It just seems like something out of a movie, though.
Yeah, you know, and one thing that's always interesting is when you buy a house, you don't think about things like that very often. But you do have to. You have to think about, okay, am I in a floodplain in case it rains a lot? I don't know that anyone's ever thought about a mudslide plane, but you would have to, I guess, think about it somewhat. Because I've had that happen where all of a sudden it rains a lot and the water's rising and you start to think, I wonder if that's going to come in here. But so sometimes it happens to people where you buy something and you don't realize the potential danger if there's a severe, you know, situation. So unfortunate for that gentleman. You never expect to have your house taken away in a mudslide, especially in some of those states.
That must be extremely powerful then to take out a house that, so I mean, several feet high possibly. Is that kind of the idea?
It must be something, you know, high enough to do some damage there. I suppose it depends on the structure as well and all kinds of things. But anyway, so a lot of rain there in the Midwest, and hopefully not too much more destruction there. They're cleaning all that up. I think Wisconsin was declared a disaster area in some parts. So that's what's going on there in the Midwest. A lot going on here in the United Nations. They're having their meetings where everybody gets together and gets to take a shot at everybody else. You got to have a lot of, I don't know what you'd call it, courage, I guess, or to get up there and accuse other nations that are sitting before you, you know. A lot of bravado, I guess.
Yeah, there's some pretty hilarious fights among these politicians or these representatives in some of these meetings, not always necessarily in the United Nations, but like, for example, British Parliament,
yeah,
where you insult someone and they start heckling you, or they get in a fist fight right there in front of everybody.
Yeah, you see that happen sometimes. So anyway, they're having this UN meeting, and there has been some back and forth. Rouhani from Iran, he uses UN to hit US over nuclear deal. The deal's not sweet enough for him, apparently. Says Iran used the UN General Assembly on Thursday. First of all, they shouldn't even be at the UN General Assembly. They're the state sponsor of terror, the biggest state sponsor of terror in the world. Human rights violations all over the place. And they're going to address the UN? Isn't that embarrassing?
And they also walk out every time an Israeli representative speaks. So they clearly aren't open to world peace, which I think is the idea of these type of meetings.
Right. They're supposed to be everybody get together and find common ground, and that doesn't happen. So anyway, the Iran used the UN General Assembly on Thursday to accuse the United States of failing to meet its commitments under a historic nuclear deal. Apparently, he wanted more pallets of cash.
So ungrateful.
President Hassan Rouhani complained that America is dragging its feet on its side of the bargain. Quote, the lack of compliance with the deal on the part of the United States in the past several months represents a flawed approach that should be rectified forthwith. Forthwith? Is he George Washington? You never hear that said very
That's
often.
Quite the English vocabulary.
Yeah, apparently. Forthwith. The agreement between Tehran, Washington, and five other major powers came into force in January. Iran accepted curbs to its nuclear program, wink, wink, in exchange for their lifting sanctions. While observers say Iran has met its commitments, Tehran accuses Washington of continuing to block the Islamic Republic from the international banking system. We gave them pallets of money, limiting its ability to benefit from the lifting of sanctions, you know, by buying more military upgrades and weapons, which they just paraded earlier this week.
They did, yeah. It's hard to grasp what they're trying to say there. Maybe we should just ask them up front how much money they're expecting, because apparently $150+ million isn't really enough.
They're not very thankful, are they? It's not going to be much of a Thanksgiving in Iran. They just have a bad attitude when it comes to all the money we're giving them. So anyway, he goes on and you know, talks about this in the UN. Another story related to that, the headline is Obama is helping build Iran's force, Air Force. U.S. Representative Mike Pompeo of Kansas is accusing President Barack Obama of helping to build the Iranian Air Force by licensing Western aircraft manufacturers to sell planes to the Islamic Republic. Selling planes to the Islamic Republic? Does anyone remember 9/11? I mean, it's crazy to me. The U.S. Treasury Department has granted Airbus and Boeing permission to sell or lease at least 200 aircraft to Iran's national carrier, Iran Air. So that doesn't seem like a good idea.
Not at all. What is the purpose of this? Does he ever explain why he wants to keep giving Iran more money, or why he wants to keep giving more things, besides it being part of his legacy that hasn't really worked out?
It's insane. They say here that these planes are not part of their air force. That's their take on it. But still, it's aircraft. But Republican lawmakers have expressed concern that the new passenger planes could be used by Iran to transfer troops or weapons. Yeah, sure. They could be used for anything. That's just baffling. So you have these two things happening. You have Iran sitting there accusing the U.S. and the U.N. of not doing their part, and then the president's trying to give them more planes and on top of all the money we've given them. It leaves you speechless almost.
It's almost like we're just doing whatever it takes to have good business. Whatever enemy we can sell planes to, it's fine because we're making money off of it. But what are they going to use those planes for? Why would we want to do business with them when there are over 200 other nations in the world that are less hostile to us than Iran is? So many other potential business partners. We don't have to go to them.
Yeah, I mean, and just a little forward thinking here. Okay, we've seen what happened on 9/11, flying planes into buildings. Now, you know, how much Iran was involved with that, I don't know, but they're certainly terrorist sponsoring nation. And they want to get bombs, whether it's dirty bombs, whatever. What if you flew a plane into something that had a bomb like that on it? Well, just think of the damage you would do. The city wouldn't be there anymore. Or at least a large portion of it. So, you know, I know some people could say, well, that's, you know, pretty dramatic in terms of like thinking about it. But what is Iran going to do? Iran's not interested in flying their people to Aruba for vacation. they want to take over the world, and they call us the Great Satan. They call Israel the Little Satan. They threatened Israel again just this week, and we're going to give them planes and cash. That seems. I mean, come on.
It would definitely be better for us to be cynical than foolishly optimistic, hoping that for once, maybe all of these gifts we're giving them will be used for the right purpose. They never have yet, and all we're doing is giving them these gigantic interest payments or these ransom payments as well. They're not giving us a single thing in return, not even a thank you at the United Nations.
No, and that's the thing that's so strange about it. It's not like you could say, well, Iran's really crafty. They're not craft. I mean, they just tell you that they hate you. They hate the United States. And then demand that we give them more things. So, I mean, it's just really strange. And that I think that's why it throws people off when they're thinking about it, because it seems like it's too strange to be true. But it is what's happening. And we're seeing it on display here at the United Nations this week. So interesting there, and then we got more to talk about in relation to the United Nations during the preview of the Trump Daily Radio Show that was talked about quite a bit, and what Benjamin Netanyahu said, some of his comments. The world's best university, give you a quick guess at it. It's a prominent one. It's not in the United States.
Oh, Cambridge?
Oxford.
Oh, close. That was my second guess.
Yep. Oxford tops the list of the world's best universities. The University of Oxford, the oldest in the English-speaking world, took the top spot in the latest World University Rankings, released annually by Times Higher Education. The English university, dating to 1096, dethroned the California Institute of Technology, a small private school in Pasadena that has been ranked number one for 5 consecutive years. So they had a pretty good run.
Pretty impressive that Oxford could get to the top there.
I never heard of the California Institute of Technology there in Pasadena, but apparently good school.
Nice area.
Yeah, it's a beautiful area out there. Yeah. So this is the first time a university outside the U.S. is number one in the list's 13-year history. This year's list also underscores strengthening university systems in Asia as schools in China and Hong Kong have risen up the ranks, some by double digits. So the U.S. schools have been knocked off the top, and some of these other ones are on the rise, especially, as they say, in Asia and with China and Hong Kong there. So that's kind of the trend, isn't it, with a lot of things, where the U.S. is starting to slide and other nations are rising.
Yeah, we're going down in terms of our educational standing in the world, our economic standing, our technological might, or even our like hacking abilities.
Yeah,
we're not as good as China is, obviously, because they hack us all the time.
Right. Well, yeah, and a big hack just happened here, or was just reported here the other day. Yahoo, 500 million people. So if you've got information given to Yahoo, there's a chance it could have been hacked.
A very good chance.
I have some stuff with Yahoo. fantasy football.
That's what I was thinking too.
They hacked my fantasy football. That's why I lose all the time.
They changed your lineup at the last second.
Probably would actually help me. But no, it's that's pretty disconcerting. I mean, people can get your information. I haven't seen all the details on it. I don't know what they're doing about it, but that we've had a few big hacks lately, and that's one of the dangers of having a lot of things out there on the internet. There's a chance it gets stolen.
Yeah, just leave it in a portfolio, a physical folder, if you can.
If you can. It's hard.
It's hard now.
A lot of stuff is internet-based, you know, banking and so forth. So it is a vulnerability if it gets stolen, and that has happened. Then the White House got somebody that worked there got hacked, too, and they had some plans showing, like, where different representatives would come to meetings and, like, where they'd enter and where they'd exit and stuff that you wouldn't want people to have.
That's perfect stuff for an assassination attempt there.
Yeah, it's really dangerous stuff. So somebody hacked that and released it, and it also had the First Lady's passport. So it's stuff's getting hacked all over. They got to take all that stuff and put it in the tent, the security tent, so no one can get to it. But I keep saying it, but nobody listens.
Well, I think Hillary Clinton listened.
She listened.
Even that didn't work for her, though.
Well, imagine how much more would have been hacked if she had taken it out of the tent.
Thankfully, she put it in that tent and made sure no one was looking over her shoulder.
If people aren't regular listeners and they're thinking, what are you talking about? Hillary Clinton said that she was surprised that people got her information because she looked at it in a private tent. So, just hearkening back, some things are too good. You've got to bring them back once in a while.
There's no way she could believe that would prevent hacking. There's just no way.
I wouldn't think so, but... And there's a gem of a fact like that. You got to keep it around. They did something kind of interesting last night at a Major League Baseball game. If you're a dog lover, you probably would have enjoyed this. It was Bark in the Park night at Citi Field prior to the Mets-Braves game. Fans were invited to bring their four-legged friends to the ballpark, take a lap around the field, then sit in the stands and enjoy a hot dog. The event was sponsored by Natural Pet Foods Company and PetSmart. So kind of fun. They had some pictures of that and people walking around with their dog. I don't know that I'd want to be sitting there with everybody's dogs up in the bleachers, maybe. Seems like the barking and the fight. You know, if you go to the park and you take a walk, people's dogs always kind of go after each other and they got to pull back on the leashes. So that could have been a little distracting, I think.
Yeah, the Mets have been having some interesting things going on at their ballpark. They recently had London Mayor Sadiq Khan throw out the first pitch,
right?
The first Muslim mayor who is a radical leftist. He was meeting with Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau recently. He has a lot in common with Mr. Obama. So I guess the New York Mets are friendly toward him as well.
They, I have not followed baseball real closely, but my understanding is that they were right on the cusp, right? Is that correct? Of wild card, but then now they're not. They kind of fell out of that.
They're holding on to the wild card, maybe the second wild card spot, or they could be like a half game out right now. It's really close between them, the San Francisco Giants and the St. Louis Cardinals.
Okay.
Those three are going for two spots.
So they thought maybe, they're pulling out all the stops to try to get in the playoffs.
The lucky Muslim mayor.
Bring the dogs, bring everybody you can, and maybe that would distract the other team if the dogs were barking every time they were pitching or hitting or whatever.
I think the Chicago White Sox actually set a world record recently with something like 1,800 dogs at the ballpark.
Oh.
Whenever they had a similar event. I just would not want to go. I'm allergic to dogs.
Yeah,
that'd be my nightmare.
That would be a bad day if you were allergic to dogs. They should do something like, bring your iguana night or chimpanzee night. See how many orangutans or chimpanzees we can get in the ballpark. Yeah, all kinds of interesting things, I guess, to get the fans in the door. Here's a couple of stories from the Of Course This Happened segment. You ever been on a flight next to somebody that was quite large and you were stuck in your seat because of it?
Yes.
Well,
but
happens.
I'm also quite large, so it's also partially my fault.
Partially your fault. Lawyer sues the Emirates airline after, quote, enduring a non-hour flight seated next to an obese man. Italian lawyer Giorgio Destro is seeking £2,375, which that's not a huge sum. Usually when you see lawsuit, you're thinking it's going to be $1 million. But he's seeking that in damages for, quote, spillover. The guy spilled over his seat.
Good wording.
So that's the new term. spillover. I have spillover over here. He claims he asked to change seats but was told the aircraft was full. Emirates has so far refused to apologize or compensate him, so this one's going to go to court, I guess, to some extent. A disgruntled flyer, well, the lawyer, they mentioned that again. I guess they're just kind of recapping it. But he claims a spillover caused by the person neighboring his $29,000 window seat. Whew. Made for a deeply uncomfortable journey from Cape Town to Dubai, according to an Italian newspaper. You know, it's a pretty long flight. Mr. Destro is a gold member flyer, but says the Emirates wouldn't let him change seats and refused to offer an apology or any form of compensation. Kind of a tough deal. You feel for both people in a way. I mean, you got to fly somewhere. You're overweight. What do? It's a tough situation.
Yeah, I guess the only solution would be to lose a ton of weight, which is not very easy at all, because people are always upset when something like that happens.
Yeah.
This guy's actually being pretty reasonable. He's only asking for a fraction of the flight cost back. Normally, people would ask for like $100 million, which doesn't make any sense. They would claim emotional right. trauma and undue suffering and all these things that make no sense.
The lawyer took some selfies of himself jammed in the seat with the guy. And so there is some spillover. He's pinned in there pretty good.
Did the guy know he was being photographed?
I don't think so. It says he reportedly asked to be moved a few hours into the flight, but was told it was fully booked. There was an instance a while ago that I read about where a heavier passenger had to purchase two tickets because of the size. Mm-hmm. Got the two tickets, but they were in different parts of the plane, the seats.
It doesn't really help too much.
No, it doesn't help. So sometimes those things happen too. There's another example here. Traveler Rich Wiskin wrote on a blog that he paid an extra £13.50, I guess, for an exit row seat, expecting to travel from Perth to Sydney with more room than a normal economy seat. But he found himself seated beside an obese man, leaving him to feel like he was pinned to his seat by, quote, a fleshly boulder. On receiving his angry but humorous letter of complaint, Jetstar emailed him with an offer of a 54-pound voucher in compensation. So he got some compensation for it. But the seats are close together. No matter kind of who you are, it's pretty close. But again, if you're carrying a lot of extra weight, you're going to have some spillover.
Well, that first example, the lawyer paid $29,000+, and he's a gold member, and even then he can't guarantee a comfortable flight. So at what point do we just stop taking planes? Because apparently it doesn't matter how much money we spend or what kind of level member we are, it's not necessarily going to be a guaranteed enjoyment.
No, I mean, they jam me in the flight. I mean, no matter what, I've been on some flights where, and for me, it's not as much a size issue width-wise, but it's a height issue. And so if you get in there with a couple of other fellas that are also tall, you do get jammed together and your knees get hit by the seat. And then, of course, there's no room. And then they put their seat back and it's just riding on your knees. It's it would be better if they just gave a little more room for everybody. But then again, they lose money doing that, so they don't want to do that. So it's a profit issue.
Yeah, I guess just make sure that when you're flying, you're going somewhere really awesome that will offset the plane flight you had to endure.
But that's the way it is. You get on the plane and you're waiting, and if you get on first and you're looking at everybody that comes on, you're like, ooh, I hope not that one.
You know? Well, there's a lot of different people, not just large people, but the ones with screaming babies or like a rebellious toddler.
Yeah.
A lot of different people who you wouldn't want to sit next to. Some people who don't look like they've showered in a while.
Yeah. They've been flying for a long time. Yeah. That's so anyway, that was kind of a sad but true story there. Don't know what'll happen. There have been some lawsuits like this, and in a lot of cases the results don't go public. They keep it quiet. There's a settlement or something happens. I don't know. But the guy took some pictures of himself being kind of squished there. It's a long time to be squished.
9 hours.
Yeah, it's a long time. He said he would get up and go to the aisle as much as he could, or he would get up and sit. I guess there was like flight attendant seats. If they weren't there, he'd sit in those, which I didn't know you could do that. But then eventually he had to go back to his seat and get squished, and he was. He was really squished there.
Well, he must not have been too squished if he was able to actually get up.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, he wasn't between two people. Apparently, he was just there. That's where it's good if you can fly with your kids and they're little, because you can put one on either side and that gives you a bit of a buffer zone.
That is nice.
Gives you some space. But the only problem there is that a lot of times then the person on the other side of them will end up watching a movie or something that's pretty rough.
Right.
And you're like, oh, come on. You know, you got a kid right next to you and you're watching an R-rated movie. But
not too considerate there.
Yeah. Beats the wagon train, I think.
I wouldn't really know.
Wouldn't know, but I played.
I presume it's probably a safe bet there.
From what I've heard from the Oregon Trail days, this, the flying's a little better. Here's another one that's interesting. USC hires its first dog professor. And you wonder why we're not top in the world anymore. So this might be a good idea. I'm not sure.
Oh, no.
They say cuddling with a professor is usually frowned upon in college. Yes. but this university is encouraging it. The University of Southern California has a new faculty member, Professor Beauregard Tireberter. I don't know. They made up the name. It's a dog, and so I've microaggressed the dog by saying his name wrong. I apologize to the dog. I don't think he cares. It says he doesn't require students to write a thesis, do lab work, or memorize history. In fact, his entire job is to take away the stress assignments like that can bring. The 2-year-old Golden Doodle is a facility wellness dog whose presence at USC is to be therapy dog for thousands of students who use the school student health center. So if they're homesick or stressed out or whatever, they have to go pet the dog. It's not a bad idea to have a dog, I guess, but the fact that the school needs one, it's weird. It's an interesting thing to do. Maybe it's helpful, but it seems like you just get your own dog.
It just gives off a bad impression of students today with all the safe spaces that we have and these rooms that are filled with large fluffy pillows and comforting music and cookies. It's like, we're not kindergartners here. This is a college we're talking about, and we need a dog to go pet and hold while we're sobbing.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because I wonder if this will set a precedent, you know, for like workplaces. You know, like, well, I get really stressed at work. Well, we need a dog, you know.
Or once we start hiring those college students, they're going to expect that dog.
Yeah.
I
need my comfort dog with me here at all times. I see people sometimes in the store with dogs, and they don't apparently need them. You know, sometimes people do need them for like if they're seeing eye dog or something. But the other day I was in a store and I heard like some sort of a strange noise, you know, and I looked down and it was a baby stroller, but there's a dog in there. And it was all like had blankets around it. I don't know what they were doing. I don't know if they were trying to hide it.
Probably. That's crossing the line, isn't it?
I didn't seem like they needed
much.
It. But so anyway, that's what's going on there at USC. If you get homesick, you got a dog you can go play with.
That's one of my peeves, actually, is when people treat an animal like a human child.
Yeah.
They're not on the same level, people.
put them in sweaters. They don't need a sweater. They already have fur. Right?
Exactly.
Seems like they don't need it. I was like, why do they have a natural sweater? Sometimes you see people walking the dog and it's got a little shirt. I was like, they don't need that. Right? I don't know. It's, we need them because we're not that hairy, usually.
Usually.
Usually. So those are some of the more humorous things that are going on, I guess. I actually just got a text from one of our listeners saying sometimes they put kids on leashes. That's true. But it's true. Thanks for the text. Yeah, you do see that. And I always think that's weird. I always think that just seems strange to me. But you see that sometimes in stores where they've got them on like that harness and they're running around. It just seems odd. But
the same people who get offended by an animal being on a leash are just totally fine using that on their kids.
Right.
That's usually the same people.
Yeah. So you see some interesting things out there. Kia David that's coming up over this weekend, it's one that ran a year or two ago. It's a really good one, especially for the time that we're in right now, what we're seeing with Charlotte. The title of this program is Charleston, South Carolina, How to Solve Race Relations. That was a really good program from a couple years ago. There is a new one coming out about that similar topic, these more current race problems and police riots, I guess. That'll be next weekend. But this weekend, there's a really good one here on Charleston, South Carolina, How to Solve Race Relations. And so that's something you can listen for throughout the weekend here on KPCG. You can go back and see the video there, too, as well. At thetrumpet.com if you want to. So that's a really good program, especially considering the news this week. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host Stephen Fleury from Edstone, England, talked about the United Nations. Benjamin Netanyahu, he had some really good sound bites of some of the things that Mr. Netanyahu said. And Yeah, he really gave it to the UN pretty good, because Israel really gets demonized. And like he pointed out, he said, why are we always being attacked when, and then he went through and he highlighted all the things that the women do in their society versus the Islamic society. You know, in Israel, they're flying jet planes. They're owning companies. They're doing all kinds of things. And you look at the other side of it and what's happening. And so he's calling it out pretty just straight up. But, I mean, he's trying to protect his people and save his nation, and I guess the time for pulling punches is kind of over.
We hear that word oppressed all the time here in America. The women in Islamic societies are legitimately oppressed. It's not someone casting a sideways look at you. They are actually oppressed. They're wearing full-body garments that are black. Why are they black? In the heat of the desert. There's really no reason to have a black garment like that when all the men are wearing white ones. So even in terms of that, they're just overheating even with the clothes they have to wear.
Well, there's a really terrible story all over the internet this week about ISIS. Now, that's an extreme, but still. And the way that they treat people. And they were interviewing this one individual who would go out during the day, and he would rape and kill. And then he'd go home at night to his family. And they said, well, how can you do this? And he didn't show any remorse. He said, it's just like killing chickens. You know, and so that's the reality. Now, ISIS, of course, is an extreme example. But, again, they are trying to draw upon a certain ideology for what they're doing. You know, people will say, well, they're misreading it. Well, maybe so, but that's still what they're doing. And they're an extreme case, but what's different between them and Iran? Iran sponsors terrorism that kills people. And you have those leaders. You have Rouhani in the UN lecturing everybody. How much blood is on his hands? And then they're going to come after Israel? It's just backwards. So anyway, it's a really good program. Make sure you listen for that. And they're good sound bites from Mr. Netanyahu there. Related to that, just a little headline here. Netanyahu said, threat Iran poses to all of us is not behind us, it's before us. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu predicted in his address to the United Nations General Assembly that the days when UN ambassadors reflexively condemn Israel, those days are coming to an end, he said. But he spared no withering criticism for the world body, reminding members that what was begun as a moral force has become a moral farce. And that's true. And I'm sure they'd love to hear it. Yeah, it's a great point, sir. We'll change our ways.
They probably all walked out hearing that, but that takes a lot more guts today than for Iran to scold the U.S. You would think any nation would be terrified of scolding the U.S., but instead, the Israeli prime minister, who is exactly right with what he is saying, has to have a lot more bravery to say what he says.
And Stephen Fleury on the Trumpet Daily radio show, he points out how some of the other nations, I think specifically the African nations, they're actually seeking out Benjamin Netanyahu. They want to talk to him, and they're not interested in talking to the U.S. because here you have a leader that is standing up for something. And so the U.S. is getting diminished more and more and more. As much bravado as we see here within the country, or say even on some of the things that are said in press conferences, the world doesn't look at us the same. Because we're weak and we're capitulating to these rogue terrorist nations. So that's on display there at the UN, even if we don't maybe see it in this country as much.
We don't seem to have the slightest concern about what goes on outside of our own borders anymore. We're extremely strict with our own people now, but not with how we deal with our enemies worldwide, and we totally mistreat our allies at the same time.
Yeah. So make sure you listen for that Trumpet Daily radio show that's coming up throughout the weekend here on KPCG. Really interesting one here, Grant, that you have for us. Of course, this week the big news has been the riots there in Charlotte. And this is a really interesting write-up. It's who is behind the riots? Charlotte police says 70% of arrested protesters had out-of-state IDs. They're not homegrown. They came in from somewhere.
Right, yeah, the spokesman for the Charlotte Mecklenburg Fraternal Order of Police said on CNN, this is not Charlotte that's out there. These are outside entities that are coming in and causing these problems. These are not protesters. These are criminals. We've got the instigators that are coming in from the outside. They were coming in on buses from out of state. If you go back and look at some of the arrests that were made last night, I can about say probably 70% of those had out-of-state IDs. They're not coming from Charlotte. Sounds really familiar whenever you think about Ferguson, Missouri, and how that billionaire George Soros funded protesters to come in and tear apart that city. It looks like the same thing's happening again.
Yeah, it's really interesting because I was talking to somebody yesterday who spent a fair bit of time in that part of the country, and they said what surprised them...
Charlotte, or Ferguson? Which one?
Charlotte. Yeah, yeah, thank you. What surprised them was from spending so much time there, they said the people that they interacted with, most part, were pretty nice people. There really wasn't this sense of, you know, burn everything to the ground. They didn't have that. And I haven't been there a lot. I've been there a couple of times. And I had the same impression. I thought, well, people here are really nice. This is a really nice area. Everyone, the people that I ran into of all different races, really pretty nice. Now, I know, granted, that's a small sample size, but then to have that personal experience, to have this other fellow's personal experience mentioned, and then to see people burning and rioting, and I thought, well, that's just strange. Like, I wouldn't have suspected that, but a lot of them aren't even from there. So why are they coming, and who's sending them?
That's a good question. It seems like someone like George Soros might be doing it all over again. It talks about how in Ferguson, there was one man pulling the strings of this domestic false flag in an apparent effort to keep the media's attention on the city and to widen the scope of the incident to focus on interrelated causes, not just the over-policing and racial discrimination narratives that were highlighted by the news media in August. So he actually donated $33 million to social justice organizations, whatever that means, whatever social justice actually means. To help turn events in Ferguson from a local protest into a national flashpoint. So if you put money into these things, it's not a peaceful protest anymore, which was what it was at the start, even in Charlotte. It becomes a violent outburst that captivates the nation's attention and sways a lot of people into thinking that there is actual police brutality when in large part there is not.
Yeah. I mean, Soros has been famously, he has said himself, I can take down countries. I'll put pressure on from without and pressure from within. And he always gets riots going. And whether or not he's pulling all the strings, who knows? But what's interesting about this is there's another write-up today talking about looking at people killed by the police. And they say, okay, what are the numbers? Yeah, it's more whites than blacks. It's a higher ratio of blacks because they're a smaller percentage of the population. But there's a lot of white people that are being killed by police too. And probably in most cases because they're criminals. But sometimes people are upset, right or wrong, on the white side about somebody getting killed. They highlighted a story of a 19-year-old that got shot and killed, and he was up to trouble. But the parents are upset, and they said, well, you didn't have to kill him, and, you know, the usual thing. Nobody made a peep about it. I mean, they did. They tried to get attention for it because they felt bad for their son dying. Nobody cared. How come? It didn't fit into the narrative because they're trying to highlight racial conflict. That's what they're trying to develop. And I think hopefully people are smart enough to see that because again, there are plenty of whites that were even highlighted in this particular story. It was at the Washington Post that have had the same sort of situation. And they're trying to investigate and all this stuff. And again, from what I could tell, they probably, you know, they had it coming. If you run from the police and you have a gun, you're going to have problems. But there's nobody protesting because nobody cares to highlight the white side of it. They wanted to make it a black versus white issue, and that's what they're trying to push. It comes down to whether you're following the law or not, and that's really the issue. And the whole race side of it is just something other people are drumming up to try to cause division. You'd hate to see it happen to anybody. But again, if laws are being broken, then you're going to have problems no matter who you are. And so the numbers show that. There are lots of people that run into problems all the time and do end up having, you know, real bad run-ins with the police because of their actions, all races. And the highest number of them is white people.
Right.
And they shouldn't do it. Still break the law. That's the way it goes. But yeah. So it is interesting to see that these people were coming in. Did they say where exactly they were coming from, or was it just kind of a general out-of-state?
All over the place. George Soros has also donated $650,000 to Black Lives Matter. So that's directly related to something that like what's happening in Charlotte. It's very likely that he could have mobilized people like those rioters to come in there. It's just it does make you wonder why the riots are even happening, because even after the facts come out, they know that, well, I guess this wasn't police brutality. That doesn't mean the riots stop, though. Why aren't the riots stopping if all they care about is supposed police injustice? It's all about flipping the system on its head, and you have rich men like this who are funding it. They actually, it's kind of like one of his hobbies to play with nations, topple nations, make others rise in their place. It's just, the whole point of this article was that Charlotte is a lot like Ferguson, and it's proven that he funded people to go into Ferguson and protest. These people are coming in on buses from outside of North Carolina and setting the city on fire.
I think everybody in Charlotte should be upset by that. You know, you're coming in and burning our city down. You know, go back home. don't bring your trouble.
Get an actual job.
Well, you know, it's interesting too. You know, you look at some of the protesters out there, and I noticed how they all had like these really well-made signs. Like they were pretty well-made, and I was like, well, that's a pretty well-made sign, and it had like this. You had to go get that made somewhere. It wasn't a quick, you know, pull a magic marker out and write something down. I mean, there was several of them. They were the same. And I'm like, well, who's making the signs? And how long ago did they plan the sign and the slogan and the, you know, I don't know, but I just, you know, there's kind of this idea that it's spontaneous, but yet they have these well-crafted signs and they're all carrying them and it costs money to print them. They had to print them at a print shop and the artwork was pretty good and it had like a special design on it and everything. And, this seems strange to me.
It makes you wonder, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
It seems like they're a little bit too ready for the next incident to break out. It's like they know they have signs pre-made, yeah, so that as soon as there's another problem in a big city, they can come in there with their way too well done signs.
Yeah.
Like these are not, like you said, they're not just Sharpie drawings. These are nice signs. And
it was like a bloody handprint, and then like the blood was dripping, and like it was a good drawing or graphic, like if they did it in Photoshop or something, and it had this slogan. I don't remember what the slogan was, but I saw a bunch of people have them. I was like, wow, that's pretty industrious. Like who put the signs together? They look great. A bad message, but they look good.
And if these aren't paid professional protesters, then these people could consider a career field in the arts, because apparently they have some sort of talent,
yeah,
that could occupy their time better than these riots.
Yeah.
That's it's interesting. I mean, it seems like either it's rigged, the whole thing is rigged, or these people are very talented and should put their efforts to better use somewhere else.
Well, you know, it's been talked about this week on the Trump Daily Radio Show and how the media was so mad when Donald Trump played them recently, but they get played all the time. You know, Ben Rhodes bragged about playing them. Anytime these race things break out, they're getting played. You know, come here and report on our big thing. Now, what are you going to do if you're the media? I mean, that's the story, right? So you got to report on it. But it's nice to see this piece here have a little bit of more investigation into it. Like, well, okay, so where did these people come from? That's good that somebody looks into that a little bit. But of course, that no one's going to talk about that beyond, you know, us today, or maybe one or two other people that read it. Well, hopefully more than that, but it's not going to be the big narrative. No, you're not going to hear about that on the other networks.
No.
They're going to be right back into their old tried and true, you know, let's keep the anger going.
Right. This article also analyzes the timing of the riots in Charlotte, and it says there could be another motive for it. There's a debate on Monday. There's a presidential debate on Monday. It says, so with Hillary Clinton's poll numbers declining rapidly and a debate looming that she would desperately like to be focused on domestic division as opposed to every email, pay-to-play, foreign policy misstep, and cough or stumble she has taken, is anyone shocked that out-of-state protesters would turn up in Charlotte, suddenly turning a peaceful but angry protest into tear gas-filled deadly riots? And who is a big donor to Clinton? George Soros. $7 million. So there you go.
That's a very interesting point. It's a good thought, at least, because if you look at what happened right after these riots, she was very quick to have a statement on it. and be, you know, condemn the whites and blah, blah, blah. So, and she doesn't make statements about other things. I haven't heard a lot of statements about, well, quite a few number of things. So it is interesting to see, you know, who knows? And there's all kinds of ideas about out there about what happens, and we don't know all that. But you start looking at some of these just basic things like this author's bringing out, and it does make you wonder, mm-hmm. well, if the protesters aren't living there, then where did they come from and why did they show up?
And if George Soros is actively funding the overthrow of a lot of America's cities, and he's also supporting the radical left in this country, is there a connection there as well? Is that because he knows that the radical left could destroy the country?
Very interesting. You can read the rest of that if you want to. Where is that from? I don't think I got
that. That's from Zero Hedge.
Zero Hedge. Who is behind the riots? Charlotte police says 70% of arrested protesters had out-of-state IDs. Got to show your ID before you come into riot. Not when you vote, though.
Apparently not.
So pretty interesting there. A couple of numbers to go through here that you might find interesting before we close today. If you are thinking about traveling to a city, taking a little vacation, here's the ranking of the top 10 destinations as far as cities for 2016, according to MasterCard. So maybe that's where you spend the most money. I'm not sure why MasterCard cares, but they're trying to encourage you to travel, I guess. Number 10, is, and there's, let's see, there's not too many in the U.S. here, only one. Number 10, Seoul, South Korea. I guess this is how many people visited. Seoul, South Korea, 10.2 million visitors last year. Tokyo, Japan, number 9, 11.7 million visitors. Number 8 was Istanbul, Turkey, which surprises me, 11.95 million visitors. I don't know if they'd count refugees or not, because they have had a stream of people going through there. Not to, you know, not on vacation. Number 7, Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, 12.02 million visitors. Number 6, Singapore. Number 5, U.S.'s only entry, New York. They had 12.75 million visitors in 2016. Number 4 is Dubai, 15.27. Number 3, Paris, France, 18.03. Number 2 was London, 19.88 million visitors. And number 1, Bangkok, Thailand, had 21.47 million visitors. So only New York was in there for the U.S. International cities, a bigger destination. And here's a couple of numbers, too, about the U.S. economy. What do people think about the U.S. economy? This is from CNN. They have a write-up on it. People that were dissatisfied with the national economy, 78% of working-class whites are dissatisfied. 74% of working-class blacks are dissatisfied. Who's happy about the economy? I thought it was great. I heard that it was saved.
It's saved. It's great. It's grown by a whopping 1%.
Yes, until that number is revised, I'm sure. 64% of white college grads are dissatisfied. 54% of working class Hispanics are dissatisfied. So a lot of people are dissatisfied with the economy. People that are satisfied with their personal finances, 63% of working class whites are. 40% of working class blacks are. 77% of white college grads are. 67% of working-class Hispanics are satisfied with their personal finances. And I have to wonder about some of those groups, like the Hispanic. Like, I wonder if like how many are legal. Because if you're coming from a bad situation, you'd be pretty satisfied even if it wasn't great.
Right. It seems like they should be more grateful as well.
Yeah, don't know. Don't know where they got those numbers from exactly, but most people are not satisfied. Although with their personal finances, most are, except for the working class blacks, only 40%. But I'd be curious to find out what satisfied means, because we read the other day that most people don't have a lot of savings. So they're probably doing okay, but things can change, of course. And here's an interesting one. Those that think my kids will have a worse standard of living, 50% of working-class whites think so, 43% of working-class blacks think so, 35% of white college grads think so, and 31% of working-class Hispanics think so. So most people still, except for the whites, which is half and half, most people still think that their kids will do a little bit better than them. So keep on dreaming. Be a dreamer.
Anything is possible in America, it seems like. So hopefully people are a little bit more optimistic about their economic outlook.
Yeah, I mean, we all hope that that's the case, that the kids will do better. But the numbers don't seem to indicate that they will. Mm-hmm. Even Social Security, that's being drained, that fund is being drained very quickly. So that used to be what people would count on. You know, I'll pay into Social Security and then I'll have a nice little kickback there at the end. But that's being drained as well. So people are nervous.
Yeah, it's time to really start saving like crazy because we can't really rely on a hefty retirement package.
So those are some of the numbers that are out there as far as the economy goes. A lot of good things to listen to this weekend here on KPCG. Make sure that you listen for the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, the Key of David program, also the Trumpet Hour Week in Review program, which is coming up throughout the weekend. And we always encourage you to go back and binge listen. We don't encourage a lot of binging on things, but we do encourage you to binge listen to the programs you might have missed this week on KPCG.
There are very few things worth binging on in life, but whenever you have quality programming like KPCG, you might as well just binge listen the whole weekend, fill your mind with the right things.
I feel like we're like doing one of those telethons, you know, where people, you know, if you like the programming here, you'll send it in 1995 and we'll give you a CD.
I like some of those, some podcasts that I listen to, you can tell when they're shifting into advertising mode, and they don't even say that this is a paid sponsor. They just start saying, you know what I did the other day? I went to this restaurant and it was really great.
That's right.
We're being sincere though.
Yes.
And we're not getting paid extra to promote KPCG.
Yeah, it's funny because you do hear that on shows where they're talking about something serious in the news, and then it's like you say, I'll tell you what I do with my money is I buy gold.
Right.
You're like, really? Are you getting paid to say that? And they are. They are getting paid to say that.
Pretty nicely, usually.
Yeah. Well, when I worked at the other radio station I worked at for a while, they did it all the time. There was scripts that the different hosts would read, and but it was personalized, like they were doing it themselves. You know what I really like to do mm-hmm. with my dog is take him to, you know. And so that's a very common technique for selling things. But as you mentioned, we're not selling anything in particular.
We don't charge any money.
No, it's all free. You can also check out thetrumpet.com for any literature that you might be interested in that you hear about on some of the programs. That's all free as well. And lots of videos there and, of course, the audio podcasts as well. And might also highlight the Trumpet weekly report, which is sent out every Friday. And that goes through and gets all the big headlines of the week. And you can get that in your email inbox. It's got some links in there, too, so you can click on some videos and audio and so forth. It's
lots of links that say, we talked about this, and you can go right to the podcast. On the front page of thetrumpet.com as well, there's an article version of Jeremiah Jacques' The Sun Also Rises program about grit, and then another great article about Christian chaplains being stifled in the military.
Yeah.
So some pretty crazy things are going on, and there's some awesome articles on the top of the Trumpet right now.
Yeah, the grit one is particularly good because it's always encouraging to hear that you don't have to be the smartest person in the world to do mm-hmm. things. Makes you feel better about yourself.
Yeah, a lot of people use that phrase, oh, they just have natural talent, as kind of a bailout so that we can maybe feel better about ourselves when we're being mediocre in life.
Yeah, except for that one person who actually is the smartest person in the world. They're like, don't tell them about the grit. My plan for domination will end. But so that's a really good program as well. Sun Also Rises, also Just the Best Literature, and Music for Life. I don't think I'm missing anything. I think that's all of it.
Live by Every Word.
Live by Every Word, yeah.
Those are more biblically based.
Yep. So that's off the top of my head. I didn't even have that written down. But you can get all that at kpcg.fm. If you'd like to follow us on Twitter, you can do that at kpcgfm. We sent out some tweets about some of the programming here. And if you'd like to email us, please do so. comments@kpcg.fm. That'll do it for us this week. Have a great weekend for myself, Dwight Falk, and Grant Turgeon. Enjoy the weekend, and we'll see you back here on Monday. You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.
Listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG. You can download Trumpet Radio live segments from kpcg.fm.